Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
No, I'm not for sale.
You are Locked On Colts, your daily Indianapolis Colts podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome back to Locked On Colts, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Matt Dainley, and tonight we got my man, Jake Arthur, here again. It's Bar Talk with Jake. What's up, man?
What's up, brother? Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Good to have you back. Now, we got a lot to talk about tonight. A lot of little tertiary storylines. Colts are getting ready to unveil a Peyton Manning statue, apparently in October. Did you get a chance to see our friend George Bremer's tweet about that and how much he looked like McCown?
Oh, no, I did not.
That was funny. I mean, man, it looked just like him, too, the hairstyle. It didn't look like Peyton Manning at all. It was kind of creepy. The statue was a little creepy. But
the rendering of the statue?
Yeah, yes.
Okay.
Looked a lot like Josh McCown. Was a little strange. I'm not real sure where they came up with that, but I had to bring that up because I thought it was funny. So Manning's going to have his statue up, rightly so. He's also going to have his number 18 retired. Thoughts, Jake?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, well-deserved. I don't even think it's a question. It was just kind of, when is it going to happen?
Yeah. Yeah, there's I mean, why wouldn't they? I mean, you know, that's it's pretty much something that everybody, I think, expected to happen anyhow. It's just kind of now they've actually said it, and now it's, you know, every network is dropping articles and 45-minute segments on it. So we'll have ours real quick. The greatest quarterback to ever don the horseshoe is going to have his number retired and have a statue, which he certainly deserves both of, without a doubt. Let's talk about this, Jake. We talked about this a little bit off the air. The Colts the Bleacher Report put up a article here that has a little bit to do with the starting lineups for all the AFC South or all the AFC teams. And there's a couple discrepancies here that we think that we may have issues with. First and foremost, Andrew Luck, Frank Gore. I don't think that we can argue necessarily that Frank Gore is going to be a backup, right? I mean, he's the starter.
Yeah.
I mean, no point in arguing about that. Moncrief, Hilton, and Dorsett. I'm going to take issue with that. How about you?
Yeah, I think it's only a matter of time before Kamar Aiken is in that top three, if not week one.
Yeah, and I've said this before, and I think that you agree, is that not only do I think Philip Dorsett is not in the top three, I don't know if he's in the top four. I mean, I put Aiken ahead of him, and I'm the way that Chester Rogers looks in the offseason, the way that he ran his deep routes last year, I think that he's definitely ahead of Dorsett going in, I think. I mean, I think that Dorsett's probably got a little more natural skill set, but I think that Rodgers has proven that, you know, he can do it and that he will do it and do it effectively and create some space between him and in his coverage for sure.
Yeah, I mean, they say wide receivers development, it always was, you know, give him 3 years and everything, but we've barely seen anything out of Dorsett. Mm-hmm. In 2 years, we haven't even seen what Odell Beckham did in his rookie year, and I know that's a high bar, but we've seen a lot of rookies, wide receivers recently come in and make an immediate impact and then duplicate it in year two, and it's been 2 years for Dorsett. I understand he missed a portion of year one with a fractured ankle, but He has been far from the promising prospect he was supposed to be.
Right. Totally agree. Just hasn't been the guy that he was built up to be. And, you know, some of that's not his fault. You know, it's not his fault that Grigson pulled him out in the first round. But you know, that one of the things that kind of does make me reflect on it a little differently is that he was coming into that draft, he was the sixth highest rated receiver in that class, and he went sixth in the draft. So I don't know if, I mean, for the Colts, it wasn't the right pick. It made no sense whatsoever. But as far as for him coming off the board, as far as the way that a lot of draft analysts had him coming out, then, you know, he came off at in the right spot at least, which gives us no help at all, and doesn't make us feel any better for sure. So
yeah.
Jack Doyle and Eric Swoop, top two tight ends. Any disagreements there?
Nope. Think that sounds about right.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair too. OL is Costanzo, left to right, Muhort, Kelly, Haig, and LaRaven Clark. Any you take an issue with any of that?
No, I'm actually very impressed with that. For someone outside of Indianapolis doing something on the Colts to actually correctly peg what their starting five is right now, I almost have to tip my hat to them on that. I'm impressed.
I'm not going to tip my hat because people have been talking about it for weeks, about this group. This should be, and not only that, I think that Ballard actually came out like a week ago and said that this was his starting five. Am I wrong?
I don't remember it specifically, but he has talked about these five the most from what I've heard.
Okay. That's probably what it was then. So I'm not going to tip my hat to him. However, I don't take issue with any of it. I think that is the left to right. That's the five linemen for sure. Kendall Langford, Jonathan Hankins, and here's one, Margus Hunt.
Yeah. Oh, jeez. Okay. So what they got correctly on the offensive line, they absolutely swung and missed here.
Yeah.
While I think Hunt might be better utilized, however the Colts are going to use him, which is probably a little more inside, he's not going to start over Henry Anderson or Hassan Ridgeway. He's probably not better than T.Y. McGill either.
No.
So
no chance.
I don't understand, other than name recognition, I don't understand how this conclusion was arrived to.
See, I don't even get that. What name recognition? I didn't know who the hell this guy was until he was on the Colts. I don't remember him. I mean, I've told people on the show that when Bjorn Werner came out, that he and Margus Hunt were kind of considered two peas in a pod. Either one of them could be the blow-up star of the draft. But I don't remember that. I don't recall that. I had to look that up to find that out.
His metrics were crazy, and of course, being from out of the country, there's always that added, you know, he's new to the sport, he's got, you know, all this ceiling ahead of him. But yeah, there was a lot of intrigue about him, and there was a lot of linkage between him and the Colts leading up to the draft. Luckily, the Colts didn't come out of it with Werner and Hunt. That seems like a disaster, but... No, that's a pretty good correlation. You tying those two together.
Yeah, I don't understand that. I mean, look, I think it's just as possible that Margus Hunt makes the roster as that he doesn't make the roster. I think that it's more likely, I guess I should say that. That's probably not true. I think it's a little more likely that he actually makes a roster. But there is just no shadow of a doubt that he is not starting on this defensive line. I don't care how they come out. I don't care if they come out four wide or if they come out three. You know, he's not starting on this front seven. No chance.
No, and surely the injured version of Henry Anderson that we got last year is still going to outperform Margus Hunt.
Yeah.
And I know Hassan Ridgeway and T.Y. McGill will outperform him.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, Grover Stewart might even.
Yeah, he could. Now, I heard something, you know, as much as I talk down about him, not necessarily talk down about him, I'm just unimpressed with the pick so far, but I guess he had 25 visits pre-draft.
Oh yeah, he caught fire late in that whole pre-draft visit process.
That's crazy to me. I mean, maybe it's because he was a small school guy and they were trying to, you know, do all their due diligence or what on that. Like I've said in the past, I hope that I'm wrong about that guy, but you know, as of for now, until we get to camp, we're not going to see anything that's worth seeing anyway. So. Now, the linebacking core, Jabal Sheard, Sean Spence, Antonio Morrison, John Simon. How about yourself? What do you think about that?
I don't think that's a surprising mix. I definitely think Sheard and Simon are probably your leaders at outside linebacker. I wouldn't even put it past Akeem Ayers. He's really the forgotten man. He was our guy last year because he seemed to be the only outside linebacker playing with any sort of pizzazz, but
right.
He's kind of forgotten man going into this year.
Mm-hmm.
Inside, I think Sean Spence probably is one of your two starters. And then for me, it becomes between Antonio Morrison and Edwin Jackson for the other inside job. Antonio Morrison he's a better run defender, but I think overall Edwin Jackson is a better all-around linebacker.
Yeah.
So those guys are still so young and we have camp to sort it out, but I would probably give Edwin Jackson the slight edge. And we don't even know, maybe John Bostic comes back and reminds everyone why he was so highly regarded earlier in his career.
Yeah, I'm not saying that Bostic should be a shoe-in, but let me say this. I'm a little surprised that he didn't have him as the opposite Sean Spence.
I mean, if you've got Marcus Hunt as a starter on the defensive line, then right. Surely you recognize John Bostic.
And you know what? I'm going to actually go with what George and I were talking about maybe a couple weeks ago that has been kind of being whispers about Simon moving to inside linebacker. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if it was John Simon and Sean Spence patrolling the middle of the field in week one, and then have Basham being, because he can play the run. He can obviously rush the passer, and then have Sheard being opposite him. That would not surprise me one bit.
I heard that concept earlier in the offseason, and I did like it because he's kind of got that versatility. Like if you look at a guy like in this draft, for example,
Simon's kind of built like an inside linebacker, I think.
Yeah, he really is. He's stocky, and he is fast and athletic, which is a plus. So he can cover some ground quickly.
Mm-hmm.
It'd probably help in coverage a bit. I wouldn't be surprised if they put him in there rotationally in certain packages.
Yeah, at least in rundowns.
Yeah, maybe Basham and Ayers get some pass rush in there with Jabal Sheard.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I like that. All right, Vontae Davis, Rashawn Melvin, Quincy Wilson. I like that.
The only big unknown is Darius Butler. I'm going to go ahead with the assumption that TJ Green is staying at safety because it seems like a bad idea to move him to corner.
Mm-hmm.
But Darius Butler, if you want to get all the best players on the field at once, Butler might be the nickel still. Mm-hmm. But then again, you have to count on his missing 2-3 games at least a year.
Right. I don't disagree that I think that it's possible that they will start him there, but I don't think that he should. He lost a step last year even in the nickel. And Rashawn Melvin, to me, is a better corner than Darius Butler at this point.
Yeah, I will say I'm almost 100% certain that Davis, Melvin, and Wilson will be the starting three at some point this year.
Yeah.
Butler just, to me, he brings these intangibles. He's got great instincts and ball skills.
He does.
To me, he's a hard guy to keep off the field because he is a playmaker. I was looking at something. I was doing some research for something today, and since Butler arrived in 2012, he and Mike Adams have forced something like 37 takeaways combined since they got to Indianapolis.
Yeah,
which I thought that seemed pretty damn high. So I mean, they were a couple of old guys, but they're playmakers, and that's what Darius Butler has always done for the Colts. It's just been a problem of health for him. You never know how he's going to play, depending on what injury he has.
Yeah, and if you remember, a couple of those in Butler's first years with the Colts, first year or second year, were pick sixes too. So,
oh yeah, I think he had five interceptions each of his first couple of years. I think
mm-hmm. four. Yeah, then we move on to Vinatieri, Jeff Locke, Thomas Hennessy as long snapper. I'm going to go with. Obviously Vinatieri, and I don't care for the other two, to be quite honest with you, because I don't know, and I really don't care. I mean, sorry for all of you that love punters and long snappers, but I don't care. As far as return guys, they've got Chester Rogers and Josh Ferguson. Now, the only reason I'm going to take issue with this is because I don't think Josh Ferguson makes his team.
No, I don't either. He would have to definitely show some sort of improvement over what he did last year. Because, I mean, even in the preseason when he got the ball quite a bit and the ball in space, which was supposed to be his forte, mm-hmm. he didn't really live up to much. He didn't run the ball well at all.
Right.
Any damage he did was on screen plays. Mm-hmm. So, that's not going to fly, because last year we were wondering why he was still on the roster.
Right.
So he's definitely going to have to prove something. Chester Rogers, he'll probably make the roster. But, I mean, Quan Bray.
Yeah. Quan's a kick returner.
Yeah. I mean, if he makes the roster, that's his role.
Right.
I wouldn't be surprised to see Marlon Mack as a kick returner at some point. Hmm. And then to your point with punters and long snappers, I'm not going to pretend to know anything about the long snapper situation.
I can tell you this. He's the only long snapper on the roster.
Yeah, exactly. To me, if he has a pulse and snaps effectively in minicamp and training camp, then he's the guy. I don't see why else he would be.
Yeah.
They wanted to get younger when they cut Overton and Hennessy's 23 as opposed to 32. So there you go.
Yeah. The other day I was talking about that, is that they just wanted to get younger at long snapper, but I did not realize how old Matt Overton actually was.
And he almost he was getting close to making a mil a year. And for a long snapper, no one wants to pay that.
Right. I just did not realize how old he was. I didn't realize how long it took him to actually get into the league to begin with.
Yeah. He traveled around quite a bit first.
Yeah.
I will shine a light real quick, though, on the punter competition. It's not sexy at all, but I've been very skeptical of the Jeff Locke signing mm-hmm. since it happened. I mean, I don't want any player to not do well. It doesn't benefit anyone for any of these players to crap out. I even want Marcus Hunt to do well. But I am very intrigued by what Rigoberto Sanchez could do.
Right.
He held double duty kicking and punting at Hawaii the last couple of years and did really well at both. So, I mean, if he just gets to focus on one thing, and that's punting during camp, he might be a pretty good punter. We don't know.
Yeah. But this is bar talk, not coffee hour. We can't talk punters.
Very true. You're not wrong.
All right, brother. So the Colts apparently are bringing in Ed Dodds, Rex Hogan as co-VPs of player personnel, Brown as college director of scouting, and Kevin Rogers will stay as the pro director of scouting. You have any thoughts on these guys at all? I'm not going to pretend to know a ton about them. It's just, a vast improvement over the Colts scouting department. And, when you look at a guy like Dodds and Hogan, those two, that's really impressive. I like the fact that they're doing that as far as having two guys there, because you're going to have two guys, two opinions, and all three of them, those two and Ballard, are going to basically lock their heads together to come up with the best possible scenarios and vision for this team, over the next, you want to assume at least 4, 5, 6 years.
Oh, yeah. Like you said, I'm not going to pretend to know anything about these guys other than what I've learned since they've been brought on. I mean, those are the type of guys who are in the shadows and never get talked about.
Yeah.
But from the people who do pay attention to the scouting community on Twitter and everything, it looks like these are pretty home run signings for the Colts. I retweeted something from Matt Miller from Bleacher Report earlier. He said Ed Dodds is considered one of, if not the best evaluator of talent in football.
Mm-hmm. That's nice.
And that was a reply tweet to Peter Schrager singing his praises as well. So it looks like Ballard got a home run in Ed Dodds, and then Rex Hogan.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's going to be working the same job as Dodds, so obviously a good track record where he comes from as well. I don't know a whole lot of Morocco Brown quite yet. I'm sure we'll hear a bit more as the days come. Same with Kevin Rogers.
Yeah, it says that he was a former Browns and Redskins
personnel man.
Yeah, personnel guy. And he was basically fired by the Browns when they got rid of Ray Farmer there at the end of last year. And he was a pro personnel guy for the Skins.
Okay, so he kind of had a similar fate as Brian Decker.
Yeah.
Decker sounds fascinating. Did you happen to read the piece by Seth Wickersham on him?
Yeah, I had. We had Ethan Young on here the other night, and he basically, being that he's kind of the stat guy guru that I know, he was perfect for me to bring on here in that regard to kind of talk to the listeners and stuff and tell us what he knew about him, and kind of he's pretty infatuated with what he brings to any football team, really. His approach is pretty unique.
I have to agree. I read that article, and I caught Chris Ballard on Dan Dockich's show yesterday, kind of explaining a bit about it. But it was fascinating. He basically said any incoming player is going to have to speak with Decker first, you know, to see if he kind of passes their test. Is he a team guy? Is he what they're really looking for? Things like that. I mean, I love that they're kind of adding these wrinkles into their evaluation style and their organization as a whole. Like, this is the kind of trendy stuff we never used to hear about with the Colts. And to be honest with you, some of the best teams are the ones that step out on a limb and take these chances. And I don't see how you couldn't think the Colts aren't acting as one of these teams so far. I'm getting really anxious to see if the actual on-field product matches the type of offseason that they've been having so far.
Yeah, I agree. All right, man, let's jump over to some Twitter questions. All right, Jake, I'm going to give you this one right off the jump. Two guesses at surprise cuts and two guesses on UDFAs making the 53-man roster from at Colts Mock Draft on Twitter.
Okay, I'll start with my undrafted free agents. I really like Deshaun Bond, the interior offensive lineman from Cincinnati.
Hey, tell me why, because he's a little bit lighter than Mueller, and I'm curious as to why. What do you know about him? Because I don't know much about him at all.
Okay, so I came across him when I was studying kind of late round and undrafted options for the Colts before the draft, and I was looking at him on NFL.com on Lance Zierlein's rankings, and he always has extensive scouting reports on guys. And to me, it sounded like the only real issue with Bond was his size and arm length. And that was for a center.
Right.
And now I guess he's going to be guard. And at the time, his measurements were at 287 pounds, and now he weighed in with the Colts at 302 pounds. So he's already working on the size. And he was as good of a run blocker as he was pass blocker. So I really didn't understand why he was ranked so low. Anytime I've gone to check to find any tape on him, I haven't been able to, unfortunately.
Right.
But he always really intrigued me. And from what I've read, he sounds like he should be a good player.
Yeah, me too. I just can't find nothing on him.
Yeah, exactly. Chris Mueller is also a really good option. As much as I would like to consider some of these wide receivers, it's going to be a really tough battle because it's a numbers game. I want to say there's 11 receivers right now for the Colts, and you already know who five or six of them are going to be, and they're not going to carry more than five or six onto the roster. So,
right. I think there's a couple that could make a roster. I'm just not so sure that they're going to make the Colts roster.
Yeah, exactly. I've been asked about like Trey Griffey and things like that. It's not that he won't do well, but these guys are probably going to be the victim of a numbers game. But if they put out good tape, then they're going to catch on somewhere, just not the Colts. You know,
right.
There's a lot of movement that happens during training camp. And then I'm going to put Darryl Daniels as my other undrafted guy making it.
Okay. I like Darryl Daniels too. He's got a lot of straight line speed. I enjoy, especially when he's able to get the ball out in the open, he's hard to catch.
Yeah. I mean, he still moves like a wide receiver, but now he's got a tight end body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like that.
The tight end depth is still really, it's still really questionable right now too, because I mean, you signed Mo Alie-Cox to develop him, obviously, but I mean, if he is such an incomplete player like Eric Swope was at the time, then you're not going to keep a roster spot for him. You're probably going to try to put him on the practice squad. And then Brandon Williams hasn't been much of a success story. So really the only guys you know you're going to have around are Jack Doyle and Eric Swope. Mm-hmm. They're probably going to keep at least three or four tight ends. So I think Daniels has a good shot a lot because of that.
Yeah, I just think they're going to end up keeping Williams around for his blocking. I really do.
I think there's a good chance. But, I mean, again, if they keep four tight ends, Daniels might be a big enough playmaker where they don't want to give him up.
Yeah, that's true. Next question comes from at Mitts, TDG, Dan Mittendorf on Twitter as well. Love the Decker hire. Can Ballard's new innovative outlook mesh with the run ball and stop the run mantra of Pagano? And as much as, like, I hate to give short answers to any of these questions because I'm long-winded as it is and I like to talk, I don't think that it matters, to be honest with you. I don't think that it has to mesh. I just think that's the way it's going to be. And I think that, like everybody, not that I think Pagano's out the door next year, but I think there's a really good 50-50 chance. I mean, I think there's as good a chance he's not here as that there is that he's here, and probably a better chance that he's not here. So, I mean, this is the way it's going to be in the front office moving forward. And Pagano's not going to last as long as Chris Ballard in Indianapolis. I can tell you that for sure.
No, definitely not.
So, I mean, sorry about the short answer there, but that's honestly exactly the way I see it. All right, Jake, here's another one for you. Derek Guys at Team Trade Down on Twitter. On this current roster, do you see a player or players with the potential to take over Costanzo's left tackle spot once his contract is up?
Oh, I think there's really only a couple options there. You'd have to think, you know, Raven Clark is still young enough in his development that he would be a possibility. My quick answer would be I don't think the replacement for Anthony Costanzo would be on the roster. Mm-hmm. But just playing devil's advocate, I think Raven Clark is probably your best option. Don't know a ton about Jerry Ugakwe, but he seems like a guy who's the type that they're going to try to mold. He's not a finished product, even though he has played quite a bit in college. Those would probably be two options for them. I don't think Zach Banner is fast or quick enough to do it.
Oh, God.
No, yeah. One of my guys that doesn't seem to get enough love, but I really liked how he played in the preseason and how he looked in camp last year, is Jeremy Vucinovic or Vucinovic, but yeah. I always liked him.
Yep, me too.
He's played plenty of left tackle in camp and in the preseason. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's held his own, so I mean, if he makes the roster, that would be a dark horse guy to look at.
Yeah, he's backed up Costanzo a lot in preseason, yeah. Or especially in training camp going in, you know, and I think you, like you said about Ugakwe, I like him as well, but he and Vucinovic, I think there are the two there. The Fawn Cooper guy is the one that kind of, you know, has me intrigued a little bit, you know, don't know a lot about him or anything like that, but I love his measurables as far as that. And I've heard that he's an athletic option there. Maybe I've heard wrong, but that's what I've been told. So, it makes me want to see more of him now. Finding more to see is the issue, as usual.
But yeah.
I like Vucinovic and Ugakwe. If we're talking about a protecting Lux blindside type left tackle, is he on the roster? Probably not. But I think that you've got two serviceable guys at a minimum. And I'll be honest with you, you know, something that may shock people if it were to ever happen, if anything were to actually happen to Costanzo, Vucinovic stepped in, let's just say, for instance, and didn't play well either. I think that they move Joe Haig over there to left tackle.
I would not be shocked at that at all. He's their Swiss Army knife. I mean, yep. Anywhere they need him to go, he goes.
Yeah, and I don't think that would hurt the Colts' offensive line a bit, even if he didn't necessarily hold it down, you know, fantastically. But you still got Denzel Good. You've got plenty of, like, Adam Redmond, a guy who's been on the practice squad, for 2 years now. You've also got Austin Blythe, Brian Schwenke, and, you know, that Chris Muller guy who can all fill in as guards. So, I mean, yeah. They're fairly deep at guard.
Yeah, they are.
So, I don't think that would be a big issue at all. And let's go to the last question here. This is on Facebook, and this one says, do you see the remainder of the Colts coaching staff intact after this year if things go south? Jake, I'm going to go ahead and take this one since you kind of had the last one. I kind of answered that one as well behind you, but let me answer this quickly. No, as in I'm going to say no, I don't think that the coaching staff is split up and fired in individual pieces. If Pagano goes, anybody that he's hired specifically that he wanted in that coaching staff is gone. I don't think that they take bits and pieces out of that coaching staff and continue to keep them around behind another head coach. What do you think?
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I don't know that there's a ton of ties between people. The only real tie between the current front office that I know of right now and the coaching staff is newcomer Brian Decker, who's only been a Colt for 2 days, and Rob Chudzinski have a past with the Browns. Chudzinski really liked Decker and wanted him around, but then they were all fired.
But I literally, I think that's a Ballard hire, though.
Yeah.
I mean, legitimately.
It's tough to say, because, I mean, there have been some things that Chudzinski, I think, could have done better. I think there were some inconsistencies, but, I mean, he's kind of just got to work with what he's got. But, you know, to break all that long-winded answer down, I would think it would be wholesale changes as well. I think everyone would be gone.
Yeah, I do too. I'm, if they go, the entire coaching staff, special teams, all that good stuff, they're all gone.
Yeah, and I'll also say that, I mean, a lot has been made from some people saying, you know, why didn't Pagano get fired right away and everything? And number one, Irsay had a lot to do with it. But it also boils down to the fact that Ballard was hired very late, not only in the GM search timeline, but also the coaching timeline. He would not have had the pick of the litter to choose from.
Right.
I don't even remember who all would have been out there. Like a couple of big name guys, but he wouldn't have had the whole thing. Next year, if they decide to make a change, which I honestly don't know what their decision is going to be. But if they do, they can get rid of Pagano and the staff on Black Monday and have the exact same time to look for coaching staffs as every other team will. I think that's one real big reason why Pagano was retained.
Right. And here's a question from me to you. Does Bill Polian not know that the Colts struggle with the Patriots?
I would hope he does.
Man, this dude never shuts up. And
he had his own struggles.
Yeah, and he gets worse. I mean, his takes just get sloppier. You know, I know he's old. You know, getting older. You can tell when you hear him talk. Because his thoughts seem to be kind of coming out of left field and right field, for that matter, all at once. But now he gets, you know, articles thrown up that, you know, he stated that, you know, the Colts are that the Patriots, I mean, aren't as great as people think they are. They're not invincible. But let's be honest, you know, the Patriots have a pretty good track record so far. We can all hate them as much as we want as far as competitive balance, you know, amongst teams and stuff. But, you know, he started with the whole jive about that he had a first round grade on Brady. And there's always these stupid comments afterwards. Man, just shut up. I just want Bill Polian to be quiet, because every time he talks, it's like and it's not just Patriot fans, and it's not just Colts fans who don't want to hear him talk anymore. It's NFL people are like, this guy's got to stop. This guy has got to just quit talking, because we're all rolling our eyes at him and saying, look, man, it was a good run. It's time to hang it up, partner.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that Tom Brady line, because that's the first thing I started thinking of with the whole, you know, this guy's, you know, his hot take machine is out of control, because they didn't have a first round grade on Tom Brady.
No.
I'm sorry, they didn't.
Nobody did.
Number one, they didn't have a reason to keep scouting quarterbacks. I mean, not to say that they didn't have maybe some like backup material guys on their board behind Peyton, but when did Brady come in? 99, 2000? Yeah. They weren't thinking about Peyton's replacement or anyone to compete with him in the least. They did not have a first-round grade on Tom Brady. That one is one that just blows my mind that he would even say that.
Right, yeah. I don't get why he just keeps talking. I mean, not only that, but how is this coming up? You know, what makes him think that this is something good to say or that it makes any sense at all? I know he's not tied to the Colts anymore necessarily, but, you know, just in general, stop with the bad takes, man. Yeah, it's time to hang up the golden slippers.
And it also just reeks of, you know, this is how smart I am, you know?
Yes.
What are you trying to prove by telling people that you had a first round grade on Brady? Like, no one is gonna, number one, probably no one believes you, and no one else is rationally saying that they had a first round grade on him either. Right. You're just trying to make yourself sound brilliant at that point.
Right. And one of the reasons that a lot of people don't like the Patriots or Tom Brady or Bill Belichick or Kraft is because there's, you know, they see an obvious unbridled arrogance that comes from some of them. I don't necessarily notice that from Brady. You know what I mean? I just don't personally. But if Bill Polian is trying not to come off like an arrogant ass, he's failing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a good look for a guy who struggles to speak in public right now, to be quite honest with you.
All right. So my team right now, we're doing kind of deep dives into every Colts draft pick, and we're doing features on each one of them. And I'm working on the Malik Hooker one right now. And it's kind of got me more interested because you've kind of got two mindsets. There's kind of radical Colts fans who are already saying that Malik Hooker is the next Ed Reed and that he reminds them of Bob Sanders, things like that. And then you have people who are just haters of the Colts or any team that's not there, saying he was a bust, saying, you know, he's going to be a bust. He only started 1 year at Ohio State. He wasn't good enough to play long. Yada, yada, yada. I've pretty much found a way to debunk all of it, good and bad.
Yeah.
But, I mean, for starters, let's talk about his time at Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
Only 3 years there, redshirt sophomore, tons of guys redshirt their freshman year. So that's literally nothing. That's not a blip on anyone's radar. And then, as a, as a redshirt freshman, he's behind now NFL players Tyvis Powell and Von Bell on the safety depth chart. And even though he wasn't starting at safety behind those NFL guys, he did appear in, I think they played 15 games. He appeared in all 15 games. And Colts special teams coach Tom McMahon actually saw him play special teams at Ohio State and said he was exceptional and stood out, even on special teams. So the dude did produce in the roles he had 2 years. And I kind of get this understanding where if a guy had one quick year of like a bunch of interceptions in college, it doesn't always duplicate over to the NFL. And some guys like Gerard Holloman kind of come to mind, David Amerson, but he is not those guys. I've watched every tape that's out there on Hooker, and I don't think he's Ed Reed right now. I think Ed Reed was a more physical, cerebral player. He was the complete package, like, right away. I think Hooker could eventually get there, but he's not it yet. He's got the types of instincts that a player like Ed Reed have, but he's not as physical.
Reed could just do. He doesn't have to be, though, either.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. He doesn't have to be. He can just be Malik Hooker. I think right now he much more resembles someone like Reggie Nelson or Tashawn Gibson, which is okay.
Yeah.
You know, he's still a young football player. He's got, like, he doesn't even have to be as good as everyone wants him to be in his first year or two. He's got so much, his ceiling is so high. He's just going to keep getting better all the time. But to me, his instincts alone, if he's just a center fielder, he's going to be able to play right away. He's got the closing speed and just general understanding of what the quarterback is doing to just be able to go and get the ball. Right. So I think he will be able to see the field right away. But he doesn't, he doesn't have to be this god right away that everyone thinks. And if he is, that's great. If he's not, it doesn't make him a bust. He's a young football player who only had 1 year of starting experience. He deserves time to grow.
Right. Well, and not only that, but it's not just his physical, like his performances, his production. That stuff's going to have to start somewhere. And then it has the opportunity to grow. But not only that, but his instincts and stuff like that. It's a different game in the NFL. His instincts for college are not going to be the same instincts for the NFL. There's a lot more to read. There's a lot more coverage situations. And there's a lot more dynamics to read from the safety position at the NFL level than there are the college. I mean, by far. And now, I mean, look, people, like, we've done this before, and I think that we've talked about it. Comparisons are simply trait comparisons. People need to stop thinking that when someone says he resembles Ed Reed, that he's going to be Ed Reed. That does not mean, that is not what they're trying to say. What they're trying to say is that the guy can patrol center field from sideline to sideline, help out either corner when he's a single high safety, and he's a decent tackler. He's not a guy who's going to knock anybody out. That's what the linebackers and Gethers is for. That is not what Malik Hooker is going to be used for. Malik Hooker is going to be used for a guy who is tackling people from the waist down, dragging them down, trying to keep people from scoring touchdowns or breaking those 20-yard runs. I mean, that, it's just really that simple. I'm not a huge fan of his lack of physicality. I mean, he's a 6'1 dude. He's not a small guy. But on the other hand, I would much rather him be a little bit softer of a tackler and be a sure tackler than I would be with him being a guy who could blow somebody up, but who's also going to miss 25 tackles for touchdowns.
Yeah, and I think he does. I mean, there's some times where you see him probably take a bad angle and dive at someone's feet and not get him. But, I mean, a lot of times he makes smart tackles. He'll try to take out someone's feet, or he'll just knock them out of bounds along the sideline. Mm-hmm. I would much rather him be around for 10, 12 years and be relatively healthy than Bob Sanders it and only give us a portion of, I don't know, 3 years, 4 years.
Right. Bob's
playing career didn't equate to very long when you consider how many games he actually played.
No, absolutely not. Man, he was fun to watch.
Yeah.
Right now we've got Quincy Wilson, Malik Hooker, some other guys with some ball skills in that secondary now. And that part should be exciting because it's not going to be solely on Malik Hooker. I mean, watch Hooker and Wilson, or Hooker and Davis playing tip the ball, and Hooker end up coming with a few extra interceptions in general. We just need, you know, the ball skills to be right, and the interceptions are going to happen. So this isn't something that I think that we should be too concerned about by any means. It's a new secondary. It's a new front seven, for the most part, keeping the quality pieces in line. And these are guys who are going to be the future of the team for the most part, at least over the next couple years, pending, you know, any disasters, of course. But, Jake, that's about all I got for tonight. How about you, man?
Yeah, same here, brother.
All right, man. Well, thank you guys all for listening. Jake, thank you for stopping by. Make sure you guys follow him on Twitter. Jake, where can they get you, brother?
I'm on Twitter at JakeArthurPFS.
Everybody go follow Jake. Everybody go to iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you guys get your podcasts, and give us a rating or review, 5-star review. And thank you guys for listening. We're going to be here the rest of the week. And next week, we'll probably continue to do what I did this week, probably end up taking Wednesday off, you know, trying to keep when we're kind of on this slow period of time. You know, we're not going to drop 5 shows because I don't think you just want to listen to me talk about how to spell Colts for 15 minutes. You guys want some legit info and then some legit content. So that's what I'm going to try and get you guys. So probably won't be 5 days a week moving forward until stuff starts to pick up a little bit. But if there's a storyline on a Wednesday, you'll get a show. I can promise you that. So thank you guys all for showing up and listening to Locked On Colts. Jake, thanks again for stopping by, my brother. And I'll talk to you guys all tomorrow right here on Locked On Colts.
You are Locked On Colts, your daily podcast on the Indianapolis Colts, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.